All right, B'Shem Hashem, Nasiv and Asliyah. Welcome, ladies. This is a historical day. Traditionally, we've been giving this ladies' class in Lawrence Avenue Synagogue for over a decade, that's for sure. And the last year, we had to suspend it temporarily because of the pandemic. Good news is that according to the CDC, maybe not the president, but according to the CDC, the pandemic is behind us. Baruch Hashem, we're able to come to the synagogue freely. We're able to see everybody's faces without masechot. And we're able to enjoy these live classes. We do still have it on the Zoom, just for the people that still have a bug in their head. So we allow them to have that option. We will be getting together on Fridays, God willing, in the synagogue at 11:15. Again, there will be a Zoom option as well. I ask our members to be patient with me. I haven't given a ladies' class in about a year and a half, so I'm a little rusty in exactly how it's supposed to be delivered. So just be patient with me. Over the course of time, I'll get the knack of it again, and we'll get back into the swing. And the parasha that we're reading today is Balak. That's the parashat HaShavua. Now, the parasha is well known. I would actually say it's famous. This is the story of textbook anti-Semitism. You have a king by the name of Balak. He hates the Jews. It's no surprise there. And he has a diabolical plan to get rid of the Jews. The final solution. Many have tried this. Balak is only one of many that's on a long list. In recent history, Yimach Shemo v'Zichro, Hitler tried the same thing. One thing they all have in common, they never succeed, thank God. Omdim aleinu lechalotenu v'hakadosh baruch hu matzidenu biyadam. Hashem always saves us. Well, in this case, Balak came close. That's why it's such a dramatic story. He engaged the services of a great prophet. I cannot deny that. He was a great prophet. His name was Bil'am. Bil'am was the greatest prophet of the Gentiles. God gave them one prophet just to say, so they can't come and say, well, you didn't give us any prophets. We gave you one. And look what happened to him. He became a pervert, and the guy became, you know, also a big rasha. Anyway, the plan was, Bil'am was an expert in magic and in sorcery, and he had a good mouth. A good mouth for the anti-Semites, that is. And the plan was to put him on top of a mountain, and he'll look at the Jewish people, and at a certain moment, the golden hour, or the golden moment, he'll curse. And if everything works correctly, for Bil'am that is, and the curse comes out of his mouth at the right time, Klal Yisrael will be doomed. That's how powerful Bil'am is, and he's going to take a lot of money in order to do this. I must tell you, Klal Yisrael, in its history, was in danger many times, but not like this time. This might be the most perilous time in our history because all the pieces were in play. Bil'am is on the mountain, he sees the Jewish people, he knows the time, he knows exactly what to say, and all it is a matter of him executing, let the words come out of his mouth, and Klal Yisrael would be destroyed. Miracle happened. God didn't get angry during those days that Bil'am was trying to effectuate annihilation. And instead of curses coming out of his mouth, some of those beautiful blessings that we use at our children's weddings, are actually authored by Bil'am. Last night we had a wedding, the Hazan came marching down, Matovu O'alecha Yaakov Mishkenotecha Yisrael. And on the bottom it says, who's the author of that statement? Bil'am, the anti-Semite. If he would only know that we're using his poems to sing at our children's weddings, he was trying to get rid of Klal Yisrael. And when we go to a Jewish wedding which promotes the perpetuation of Klal Yisrael, was using the words out of the donkey's mouth, as we would say, the words out of Bil'am's mouth himself. So it was an epic failure with Bil'am. It goes down in history as one of the worst failures in history. He came to do A, so sometimes you don't succeed, but not only did he succeed, he did the opposite. Instead of cursing, actually blessed. I know you know the story. I'm just repeating it to you, just so you'd be familiar with it. But what you don't know is what the Gemara says in Berachot, page 12. Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Abahu ben Zutrati, Amar Rav Yehuda bar Zvida, Bikshu Likbawa Parashat Balak Bikriyat Shema. There was a movement in the times of the Gemara of the rabbis, that a rabbinical council meeting, and in the meeting they were deciding, and they wanted to make it mandatory that you must read Parashat Balak every morning and every evening during the recitation of Kiryat Shema. You believe this? We know that we have to say Shema twice a day, in the morning and in the evening. But they wanted to make an addendum to the Shema, that in this, they wanted to add to 20 pages to read this whole parasha twice a day. Now, you know how long that would take? To read this parasha takes about 15, 20 minutes. And they wanted you to read it once in the morning and once in the evening during the Kiryat Shema. So why did they vote against it? For the reasons that you believe. Gemara says, "Umipenemal lo kav'um mishum torah sibur." Because it's torah sibur. Torah sibur means it would be a burden on the congregation. To tell the congregation now that they have to add 20 minutes to the prayers in the morning and 20 minutes in the evening, it would be too much for the people. And the Hachamim are very sensitive to time. Acham Baruch Alav Hashem, the rabbi of this synagogue, was known to be very, very strict on starting the prayers on time and ending on time and praying in a quick pace, because he felt he doesn't want to burden the people. So over here, the Gemara says, it was a good idea. They wanted to add it to the Shema, but they said, better not. My question was, what in the world, with all due respect, what in the world does this parasha of Bil'am have to do with Kiryat Shema? Which means, normally you would include things that are similar to each other. But the concept of Shema, which is accepting God upon us, what does it have to do with the story of Bil'am trying to curse us? Why were they even thinking to include it in the Shema? Now, furthermore, I'd like to quote you what Harambam writes. Maimonides reveals us a very important principle. It's one of the 13 principles of faith. And he writes the following. HaMelech HaMashiach. Everybody likes to talk about Mashiach, especially these days. Well, the king, he's a king, Mashiach. Atid La'amod. There's going to be a Mashiach. One day he's going to reveal himself. Ula'azir Malchut Bet David Liyoshna. And he's going to return the Davidic dynasty to its old glory. U'boneh Mikdash. And he's going to build the temple in Jerusalem. U'mikabes Nedchei Yisrael. And he's going to gather the Jewish people from the exiles. All the Jewish people, wherever they are, they're all going to come back to Eretz Yisrael. Makrivim Korbanot. They're going to start bringing sacrifices again. And then Maimonides writes, V'chol mi she'enu ma'amin bo. If anybody doesn't believe in the concept of Mashiach, if somebody comes and says, nah, Mashiach, no, this is not nonsense. There's no such thing. O mi she'enu mechakel bi'ato. Or somebody that's not waiting for him, somebody that's not anticipating his arrival, who kofer b'chol ha-Torah u'Moshe Rabbeinu. He's considered a defector. Which means not to believe in Mashiach and to anticipate his arrival is considered a federal crime in Judaism, and you're considered defecting from the ranks of authentic Judaism. It's unforgivable. And then he writes, that where do we see in the Torah that there's going to be a Mashiach? I don't know. If you would ask me this question before I saw Maimonides, if you were to ask me, where in the Torah does it say there's going to be Mashiach? I would not be able to answer you. There's no pasuk explicitly that says, and one day there's going to be a redeemer that doesn't say it. But Maimonides actually found it in our parasha. He says, Ve'af beparashat bil'am ne'emar. Not only does it mention it, it mentions the two Mashiachs, because there's going to be a Mashiach ben Yosef and then a Mashiach ben David. And he says when Bil'am was making his forecast and his blessings, he also blessed the Jewish people. He says, I see in the future Arenu, I see. Velo ata, I don't see it now, but I see it in the near future, or in the far future. That what? That there's going to be darach kochav mi Yaakov. That a star is going to rise from Jacob. And my mind, he says that star was referring to Mashiach. Vikam shevet mi Yisrael. And the tribe is going to arise from Israel. That's the tribe of the Mashiach. So one of the prophecies that Bil'am said to the Jewish people on that mountain, not only was blessings, but he told them, there's going to be a redemption. You're going to be redeemed by the Mashiach himself. And I had a simple question. Bil'am, your intention was to curse us, and Hashem turn your cursing into blessing. Why is he mentioning Mashiach? Why is he forecasting to us that there's going to be redemption? Obviously, Bil'am had a purpose why he felt it necessary to tell us the story of our redemption, that one day we're going to be redeemed. And just in parentheses, that day is very close. I guarantee you that. You don't have to be a prophet anymore to know exactly that this redemption that we're anticipating for thousands of years, we're on the cusp of it. All the signs already that the Gemara told us have come true already. We're not waiting for any more signs. Even as I told you, the Ben Ish Chai wrote in one of his books 100 years ago, that before Mashiach comes, it's going to come on the blood of 45 Tzaddikim. And when the 45 Tzaddikim passed in Meron, a lot of the rabbis came along and said, even this, the Ben Ish Chai said, the 45 Tzaddikim. Nonetheless, I think it's all clear. But why is Bil'am getting involved in Mashiach all of a sudden? So I'd like to reveal a tremendous secret. It's based on a lesson that I saw from my great colleague, Rabbi Friedman, from the Holy Land of Israel. He sent me a beautiful revelations. And then, of course, I checked it up. And Baruch Hashem, his sources are all gold. They're all gold. And I have them here. And I'd like to go through them to you and then make a summation of it to what was being said. Whenever we study the Torah, we never study the chapter in front of us. We like to find out where the shoresh of the parasha is, where the root of it is. I know many people, when they read parashat teshuvah, they read the parasha itself and they get stuck in the parasha, but they don't realize that every parasha has a root. Every parasha has DNA. You have to follow the chromosomes all the way back until you find the original gene that creates the parasha that you're reading. I know it's a new way of learning the Torah. Most people say, what do you mean? It's enough to read the parasha. What do I have to find the DNA? Because if you find the DNA of the parasha, you find the essence of the parasha, and then you can start to make the proper conclusions. Now, we have a big challenge. Listen to what we have to... It's a scavenger hunt. Here's the clues that we have to look for. We have to find in history, was there ever an anti-Semite like Bil'am that had intention to kill all the Jewish people? Do we have a situation where he failed? Because Bil'am failed and he wasn't able to. We have to find a situation that is similar to Bil'am, that he tried to kill the Jewish people using his mouth, because that's how Bil'am wasn't a weapon, it wasn't nuclear weapons. And we have to find again that it did not succeed. And the opposite happened. Blessing came to us. Now that's a tall order. You know, that's not ordering a still water in a restaurant. That's an easy order. This is a tall order. Where are we going to find in French? I know some of our members speak French. This is called déjà vu. We have to find déjà vu. Where did this happen again in history? We have to find a remez to the story. And if we can pinpoint it, then already we'll start to see all the secrets come. Guess what? We found it. Good news. It's in Parashat Vayetzeh. You have a story of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu, he goes to get married. He goes to live by Laban's house. Laban was his father-in-law. It doesn't tell us about his mother-in-law, but she couldn't be too much better than Laban was. That's my assumption. But the point is, he goes to live by Laban. And he has his children. The Shivatim were born in Laban's house. Actually, he ends up marrying not one of Laban's daughters, but four of Laban's daughters. Rachel, Leah, Bilhah, Zilpah are all Laban's daughters. He ends up creating what we would call Klal Yisrael. At the time, Klal Yisrael was not 3 million people or 10 million people. It's Yaakov, his four wives, and his 12 children. That's it. It's or 11 children, actually. Binyamin wasn't even born. So you're dealing, what, 11, 12, 13, 14, 16 people. That's the whole nation. Now, by the way, that's very important that that nation remains preserved. But it's very easy to kill the nation. If somebody has an idea to kill the nation, it's easy to kill 16 people. Hitler killed 6 million and he still didn't kill all of us, thank God. But to kill 16, you don't need such a big bomb or such a big gas chamber, or God forbid, you don't need so many guns. With one gun, you can mow them all down. I want to make it clear. The intention of Lavan was to kill all of Yaakov and his wives, even though it's his daughters, he don't care. Once they converted to Judaism, they're not his daughters anymore. He wanted to kill all of them. How do I know? The Torah says it. Yaakov Abinu later on would testify and say, Arami! Who's the Arami? Lavan. Lavan Arami. He comes from Aram. Arami, my father-in-law, Lavan Arami, Oved. Oved means he tried to destroy me. He tried to kill me. Where do you see it? You see it in the text. I'm reading the story. Yaakov Avinu, after he gets married, he had enough with his father-in-law. He had his children. He told his wives, listen, we're done over here. We're done. I can't live here anymore. Your father's looking at me funny. We don't need to have any more business over here. Let's move on. Laban's daughter stayed to Yaakov Avinu. Absolutely. Our father is acting strange. We better get out of here. So they leave. They don't tell Laban, see you later. They leave. They're grown people. And all of a sudden the Pasuk comes along and says, Laban finds out that they're running away. Vayugad le Laban. Ki barach Yaakov. So watch this. Yaakov, Laban now is chasing him. Vayadbek oto behar Gilad. Now he reaches him. Now what do you think he was to do there? It wasn't giving him, oh, listen, you didn't tell me you're leaving. I wanted to give you a dozen roses. I wanted to give you some chocolates for the road. That's not his intention. His intention was to kill him. How do we know? Vayavo Elohim el Laban ha'arami b'halom ha'layla. And God comes to Laban ha'arami in a dream. Vayomer lo, and he tells him, Hishamer lecha. I'm warning you. I don't want you speaking to Yaakov, not good and not bad. What do you mean speaking? Speaking, let him speak. Haki Balash. No. The Achamim tell us that Laban knew how to curse. Laban speaking was curse speaking. And if he spoke the wrong words, he'd be able to kill Yaakov and his family. So Yaakov Abinu is running. Laban is intention to greet him and curse him. And he gets a warning from God. Don't do it. By the way, ladies, that sound familiar? Bilam was the exact same story. He's hired by Balak to curse the Jewish people. And I'm reading you from our parasha. The pasuk comes along and says, after he hires him, he says, okay, well, I have to ask God if he lets me curse. What does the pasuk say? Vayavo Elohim il Bil'am. Same exact words. God comes to Bil'am. And God tells him, Lo telech imahem. Do not go. Lo ta'or et ha'am. Do not curse the people. So you see, the roots of Parashat Balak is in actually Parashat Vayetzeh. Now what happens? He finally catches up with him. Yaakov and Lavan, they meet. What does the Pasuk say? Yesh le'el yadi la'asut imachem ra. I have the power to hurt you. If I wanted to, I have the power to kill you. But I can't. Ve'lohe avichem, your God, Emesh Amar Elai Lemor, came to me in a dream and said, Hishamer lecha, middaber im Yaakov mitov adra. He warned me that I can't speak not good and not bad. It's exactly what happened with Bilam. Bilam says, I wanted to curse the people, but God is not letting me. So I said to myself, there must be the roots of our parasha and this parasha. This is DNA. It didn't start with Bilam. It starts with Laban Arami. And then I found this paper over here, which is from the Benu Ari, the Arizal. The Arizal in the great Sefer called Etz Hayim. It's a Kabbalistic book. Okay, it's Friday. We can do Kabbalah on Friday mornings. He writes like this. Hold on to your seats. Kilavan Arami, Avi Aviv Shel Bil'am. Oh. It was his grandfather. Lavan Arami was the grandfather of Bil'am. That was his grandfather. He goes, do the math. Go back a couple of generations. That was his grandfather. And then he says, V'hu atzmon nitgalgel bil Bil'am. When Lavan died, the neshama, whatever you call it, the spiritual part of Lavan, the Gilgul, Lavan went into Bil'am. So when you see Bil'am, you don't see Bil'am. Bil'am, you have to put A.K.A. Rashi Tevot, also known as A.K.A. Lavan. That's the Kabbalah says. And then he says, "Umimenu lamad Bil'am ben Beno ma'ase kishafim." Where did Bil'am learn all his magic from? From his grandfather. Lavan was the biggest mechashef, the biggest sorcerer. He had the biggest power of black magic. He was the expert. And he taught all those tricks and all that science to his grandson. So Bil'am graduated Harvard, Harvard School of Kishuf. And who was the dean of Harvard School of Kishuf? Lavan, his grandfather. He graduated with honors. He graduated valedictorian. He made a speech at the graduation. He made the dean disappear. Which is not a bad thing. And then he comes along and he says, and that's why both of them had intention to curse, actually. Bil'am was supposed to rectify the sin of Lavan. Lavan's sin was he tried to curse the people. But of course, Lavan would come again and make the same sin. He would intend to curse the people. God had to stop him. So instead of rectifying, he should have came on his own to bless the people. That's how you make your tikkun. But instead, he doubled down. His grandfather, Laban, his Gilgul, tried once and failed. But it even gets more serious than this. If you remember, I don't know if you know this, but how Bil'am ultimately died. You remember how he died? Very, very, odd death. I'm reading to you now from the Targum Yonatan ben Uziel. He explains here. V'yad Bil'am bar Be'or kitalu b'sayfa. They killed Bil'am by the sword. Sayfa. How? Who killed him? Pinhas. Which is next week's parasha. Coming up. Now how did he kill him? So you thought he killed him in his bed. He saw him sleeping in the bed. He knocked on the door. Who's it? It's the milkman. He came in with a sword and he killed him. Pizza man, he killed him. That's how he killed him. He killed him in an amazing way. Pinhas was chasing Bil'am. He had him on the run. And Pinhas has a sword in his hand. Now Bil'am turns around and sees a guy with a sword. He knows he's going to kill him. It's going to be in his stomach in a minute. Kadyat Hama Bil'am Hayabayat Pinhas Kana Radif Min Batroi Avad Miltad de Kusmin. So he used magic. And what did he do in the magic? Ufarah ba'avira. Nobody's on it. I'm looking at my own face. You think I'm doing? You thought there's 10,000 people on it? Nobody on it. There's nobody on it. Nobody cares to watch this dumb thing anymore. I'm looking at myself. So anyway, it says, Abad miltad de kusmin. He used some magic. Ufarah ba'avir. And all of a sudden, he propelled himself in the sky. Now Pinhas all of a sudden sees this guy floating. Like today they have these propellers. You go and it makes you fly. He didn't need the propeller. He did it on his own. Now how's he going to get it? So Pinhas says, you're tipesh. You think you're the only one that knows how to fly? I also know how to fly. What does that mean? That's easy. That's alphabet. We learned that in first grade. Ba'avir shemaya. Minyad immediately adkar Pinhas Shema Rabba Bekadisha. So Pinhas mentioned one of the names of Hashem, and all of a sudden, he's up there now. Now you got two guys flying in the sky. Ufarah Batroy. And he's chasing him. Vahde Bereshe. He caught him by the head. He got him by the head now. Vahate. Shelaf Saife. Now he took out his sword. Ebon. Uba'al Mektele. He's going to kill him. Patah Pumeh B'Mileh D'Tahanunim. Ya Rasha. This Bil'am starts to cry now to Pinhas and starts to beg him. He pleads. What is he pleading? If you will spare me, Mishtabah Nalach, I swear to you, Dechol Yomin Da'anak Kayam, that all the days that I will live, let anam milatet yat amach. I will not curse your people. Look at the Rishayim. He wants reward for not cursing. He won't even say, and I'll bless. He's such an anti-Semite, this guy. Why don't you say, save my life, and I'll bless you, I'll be good to know. He can't even get that out of his mouth, even at the time of his own death. The Goyim, they want reward for not killing us. And you see a guy in the street, already he says, you owe me. What do I owe you? I didn't kill you. They want reward, they didn't kill us. That's already considered a big accomplishment, that they let the Jew walk in the street without spitting on us. We have to pay them for it. So listen what Pinhas tells Bil'am. Unbelievable. Hala antu lavan arama'a. You're lavan arami. You don't think I know you are? I could smell you from 100 miles away. You skunk. Deba'it lemeshetzayayat Yaakov. You wanted to destroy Yaakov, which means you're a liar. This is not your first time that you did this. You're telling me I won't do it anymore. You're a shah. You did it once when you were Lavan, and you said in Lavan's time, I could have done it, but God said I'm not allowed. And then you came back a second time, you did it again. So you lost your credibility. And then Pinhas took out his sword, and he killed him. Now, it's not so well known, but how old was Bil'am when he died? He wasn't an old man at all. The Arizal says he died at the ripe young age of 33 years old. Shows you he could do a lot. In 33 years, he created havoc, the guy. But the Arizal questions, why 33 years old? Ladies, listen to another part of the story. You know, you have to keep your word. The Gemara says, if you make a commitment to somebody and you don't keep your word, there's always witnesses. Always the witnesses, even though you don't think there's witnesses, there's always somebody watching. And that witness will take revenge on the one that doesn't keep his word. I'll give you a story that the Gemara says. There's always, the wall is watching. The ceiling is watching. So you can never get away with anything. There's always a witness that's going to testify if you didn't keep your word, and somehow even the wall will come after you. As I'll show you. The Gemara tells a story of a young boy who promised a girl that he's going to marry her. And she said, but there's There's no witnesses. How do I know that you're going to marry me? She looked around. He said, well, over here there's a weasel. There's a weasel and there's a boar, a pit. These are the two witnesses. So she said, she was simple girl. She said, okay, how is a weasel going to be a witness? A weasel going to be a witness? There's a squirrel. A squirrel and a boar. Fine, she accepted. Know what happened? He can't trust anybody. He went, he forgot about it, he got married to somebody else. Azita, now, she's stuck. He's married to somebody else. Anyway, he's married, very nice. He has a baby, Bisimban Tov. The first baby gets eaten by a weasel. Ladies, come down. You're watching TV all day long in the news. Now I say about a weasel, you make a... So now, he gets eaten by a weasel. So now what happens? Why? So the wife says, what's going on over here? I don't know. It's strange. How many people get eaten by a weasel? Doesn't happen. They have another child. You know what happened to the second one. He fell into the pit. Now already the wife says, listen, this is strange. Strike two. Tell me what happened. So he said, I have to confess. There was another girl. I didn't know, but when I was young, I said, let the weasel and the boar be witnesses. And it seems the witnesses now are coming to take revenge because I didn't keep my word. And sure enough, so the wife said, okay, leave me, go to her and finish. And everybody lived happily ever after, as best as could be. My point is that the witnesses who see the action sometimes will take revenge. Let's go further. So Yaakov Avinu, I'm going back to Yaakov. Yaakov Avinu says, listen, we have to make a peace treaty. You try to kill me, God came to you, that's today. How do I know in the future you're not going to do this again? So we need to make a peace treaty. Yaakov says, I won't fight with you, you don't fight with me. So what did they do? Amazing thing. Ba'ata, lechan nechreta berit. Yaakov tells Laban, let's make a berit, a covenant. Ani ba'ata. Vaya le'ed. Vaya le'ed. Vaya le'ed. And this, whatever treaty we're going to make a sign, a monument. And the monument's going to be a witness. See, they believed that even an inanimate object can be a witness. Because if you designate even something that's not alive to be a witness, it'll be a witness. You could energize even an inanimate object and say, this is the witness, and he'll stand for you. So what did they have? Vayikach Yaakov Evin. Yaakov Evin took a rock. They didn't have a weasel, they took a rock. Vayimea Maseva. And he made a Maseva, he made a monument. Yaakov tells his children, Liktu abanim. Everybody take a rock. Vayikru abanim. They took rocks. There was a big rock, and then they added it to the small rocks. Vayasu gal. And they made what's called a gal. You know what a gal is? A pile of stones. What do you think it is? A pile of stones. And they had a Sa'uda over there. Peace treaty. And they named the place Gal'ed. Okay, they named the place Gal'ed. Vayomer Lavan. Hagal hazeh ed. Even Lavan said, this is the ed. I accept. This is the ed. That what? I will not fight with you, and you don't fight with me. Re'eh Elohim ed b'ni u'b'necha. And we're bringing God to verify what happened here today. Unbelievable. That's the story. Ladies, did Laban keep his word? He didn't. When he came into the Gilgul of Bil'am, you know what he should have done when Balak hired him? He should have said, listen, I'm not allowed to do that. There's a peace treaty my grandfather made with these people. My grandfather Laban is in a peace treaty. There's a gal. There's a whole thing of rocks. I'm not allowed to do nothing. Sorry. We signed a contract. Now Balak would have told him, what do you mean, a contract with a rock? Listen, it works. That's the end. Instead, what? He made it as if he didn't make a treaty. So what happened? Bil'am starts to travel. What happens that he starts to travel? He starts to travel all of a sudden. The donkey, remember the story of the donkey? And all of a sudden an angel comes in front of the donkey. A roadblock. The Waze doesn't have angels on the road. The Waze can tell you if there's a pothole or if there's a cop. But it doesn't tell you, be careful, 5 miles from now there's an angel on the road. It doesn't have that technology yet. Yet. Anyway, Vatere ha'aton et malach Hashem. The donkey sees the angel. So he wants to go off the... He can't go straight. He got scared. So what did it do? Vatilachetz elakir. So it moved to the side, to the wall. And whose leg is on the side of the donkey? Bilam. What happened to his leg? It got. Vatilachetz et regel Bilam. And it started to put pressure on the leg of Bilam. Elakir. Now take a guess, ladies. Which wall was this? Which wall was this? Was this the Kotel al-Ma'arabi, the wall, the Western Wall? Doesn't tell us. It just tells us the wall. Was it the Great Wall of China? I don't think it was in China. Which wall was it? So that she over here, who many of you think, oh, Rashi doesn't know Kabbalah. Rashi is Peshat. Rashi says that when they were traveling, there was a wall, Geder. The Torah calls it a Geder. The wall is a Geder, or Kir, Geder. So Rashi says, Stam Geder Shel Avanimhu. You have to know, when the Torah says the word Geder, it means it's a fence of stones. Azaka Baruch. Now the next time if I go into construction, I will know that again. Who cares what it's made out of? And if it's made out of a picket fence, do I? What does she have to tell me what the fence was made out of? She says, oh, you should know. Rabotai, I know you. I don't want you to lose sleep on this. Stam Geder Avanim. Thank you. I'm glad good you told me. Because I was worried. I thought it was made out of plaster. Now you tell me it's made out of stones. What does she want over here? Does anybody care what the Geder is made out of? That she's telling you. Stones. Where's the last time in the Torah you read about those stones? The last time you read is when Lavan already made the stone. And what? You, Bilam, you didn't keep your word. You're going to curse the Jewish people. And therefore, who's the one that's going to testify against you? The stone itself. Just like the weasel and the boar, the stone came and started to crush his leg. And that's not my words, the Targum Yonatan ben Uziel on this pasuk says, "Vekam malachaya Hashem." The angel came, "Beduchka bnei Karmaya." And where was this wall? What's this language? Atar. Atar means the place. The Akim Yaakov veLavan. The place where Yaakov and Lavan ogar vekamam mitzera. And on the bottom over here in the interpretations it says, Velachen nifra hakir memenu. That's why the wall punished Bil'am. Lefi shehu ha'ed ala shivu'a. Because that was the witness on the shivu'a. And the pasuk says, Yad ha'edim tihyeh bo barishona. There's halakha that says, when somebody's guilty, let's say of stoning, who stones? Who throws the first rock when they stone somebody? The witness. The witness, Yad Ha'edim, Tiyebo Barishona. And therefore here, the witness sees that Bil'am is in contempt of the peace treaty. Did you believe this? Nobody knows. This wall over here was a... But I'll even tell you something more. This brought from the Mekubbalim. If you have extra time, I know everybody's busy on Erev Shabbat. If you came here already, allow me to say the full version of it. The Arizal says, that after Bil'am got killed, where did he go? Where did he go, Bil'am? I mean, let him go to, you know, but where did he go? What happened to him? What happened to his soul? So the Zohar HaKadosh says, Arizal says, his soul went into a rock. Believe it, sometimes bad souls get gilgul in rocks. You ever walk down the street sometimes and you see a rock and you have a desire to kick it?
Sometimes you just wait. He said, what are you doing? What are you kicking the rock? Hashem did that because there's a rasha in that rock over there. So when you kick the rock over there, the guy's, you gave it to me. Him and the rock. There's a reason why. Or something, you pick up a rock. For no reason, you throw it. The guy said, what are you doing to me? I'm doing it to you. Rasha. Everything is for everything. There's a reason for everything. But the Arizal said there's a reason why he went into the rock. For good reason. In Judaism, we call a rock a domem. Domem means inanimate. Domem. You know what the word domem also means? Dom means silent. Vayidom aharon, silent. Domem. Because a rock is silent, right? Rock doesn't talk. So God says, midah keneged midah. You used your mouth to talk against the people. Now you will go from a medaber to a domem. Measure for measure. You'll go from a one that talks, now you'll become a inanimate, a rock. So he became a rock. By the way, which rock? One of those rocks on the wall. One of those rocks. You understand what happened over there? And what was it called, that gal? What's the numerical value of gal? 33. That's why Bil'am died at 33 years old. You went against the gal. You went against the gal. And you know why they called it gal? Because gal is Rashi Tevot. Gilgul Lavan. Gilgul Lavan. He's the Gilgul of Lavan. This rock over here. The Gilgul of Lavan. He became the Gilgul. He became Bil'am. So now what happens? So he was in the rock. All of a sudden, Hashem said, okay, it's time to make, let him come out of the rock. Let him come out. Let him see if he can fix himself. This is take three, or take four. And he started as Laban, then he was Bil'am, then he was a rock. And now we're going to give him one more chance to make tikkun. The time is short, but if you open up the book of Shmuel Aleph in chapter 25, David HaMelech was running away. And he needed food. And there was a rich guy, the husband of a lady called Abigail. Abigail eventually would become David's wife. But at this point she was married, and her husband was a bad guy. Rich guy, but bad guy. Sometimes you have the rich guys that are bad. Sometimes you have the rich guys that are good. But this guy was a bad rich guy. And David needed food from him. So David went up to him and said, please, shalom to you, shalom to your family. Maybe I could have something. And this guy comes along and says, yeah, you're good for nothing. He says, you're near zero. He says, you're a rebel. And he started calling David all sorts of names. Anybody know what this guy's name was? The guy that cursed David when he was down and out, he cursed him. The Nabi tells us his name, Naval. His name was Naval. And the Arizal says that the Naval is the same letters as Lavan. You understand what's going on? And he came back in order to fix his mouth. The dirty mouth of Lavan, the dirty mouth of Bil'am. You were a rock. Now you have a chance to fix it. So David comes in front of him. If he would have told him, Yishtabach Shemcha, bless you, King David, bless your family, it would have been fixed. Instead, what did he say? You're good for nothing, you're zero, you're worthless. And then all of a sudden, Abigail, his wife, realized that he can't do that to the David. He's talking. So she went to plead with David, please have mercy on my husband, please. He doesn't know what he's doing. David said, oh, you'll see, I should have taken care of this guy. What does the Pasuk say happened to Naval? Eventually he died. But listen to the way he died. Listen to what the Pasuk says. You can't believe this Pasuk. Vayamot libo. When he heard that he's in trouble, it says he died in his heart, so to speak, which means he was, before he physically died, but he died in his heart. Vayamot libo bekirbo. Vehu haya le'avin. Literally it means, and his heart turned to stone. But the deep explanation is, when he realized that he didn't make the tikkun, v'hu haya le'avin, because he was originally a stone. He was a stone, literally. V'hu haya le'avin. But now he says, I had a chance to fix it, and my Yetzirah got the best of me, and instead of blessing him, I cursed him. And therefore, Naval, the next pasuk says, Vayishma David ki met Naval. Naval died. So the tikkun was not made in Naval. So you see the story keeps on going. Very good. So that explains a lot. Once we understand the connections between these two stories, so when you hear Lavan, Bilam. When you hear the Gal, it's the same wall. And therefore, it says, which part of Bilam's body got crushed into the wall? His elbow? His leg. Regel. Beautiful. And the Mikubalim say, Regel. Is Rashi Tevot Rasha Gilgul Lavan Regel? That I heard from Rabbi Friedman. That's his Hiddush. Regel Rasha Gilgul Lavan. That's why they got him on the Regel there. And Regel also has Gal in there, which is the Gal. It's the same Otiyot with the Resh. Anyway, so this is a new way of looking at the Torah. So if somebody comes along and says, "Oh, you went to the Rabbi's class today? Yeah, what are you talking about? You're talking about Lavan." Lavan, what is he on drugs? We're reading Parashat Bilam. What was he talking about? Well, we didn't have a class in a year and a half, so he had to go back to no. You answer them very confidently. If you don't study Parashat Vayetzeh, you will not know the story of Bilam. Bilam is the sequel. I'm not interested in part two. I want to know part one. Bilam is the end of the story. I want to know the beginning of the story. So you need to put these two episodes together to connect exactly one happened to the other. So yes, we found that the scavenger hunt, we found there was a situation where there was a man that tried to curse the Jewish people, all of them, with his mouth, and he failed miserably, and he wasn't able to curse, and instead, he made a peace treaty that was blessing. And what does he mean, the blessing? And here's the point that I want to make today. This is now that you heard the Kabbalah, now let's hear the lesson. There's a practical lesson here. The lesson is a very strong lesson. You know, we say every day, Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. What does it mean, Hashem is Echad? Ladies, you should say Shema too every day. What does it mean, God is one? So I know how you're learning it. I mean, one, there's not two, there's not three. We know that, that's Aleph Bet. One means there's no other force that works independently without HaKadosh Baruch Hu's control. Even the angels, you talk about the angels are powerful, the angels have no power. The angels only have power because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them the power. Echad means there's one source of energy coming from everything. Nobody has an independent strength to do what he wants. Even the Nesha'im, and here's the point, even the evil people, when you see the evil people doing all these things, so some people will say, well, there's a force, black magic, what do you want to call it, to have all sorts of evil. Paro, he had powers. Hashem Echad. All the powers come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Hashem, when he wants to show us that he's Echad, listen to this, when he wants to show us that he's one, he'll use the Rasha, he'll use the evil one to do his will. I explain. I'll give a simple explanation. This one you know already. I didn't come to say this one, but this is the easy one. Borei Olam wants to show that he's controlling the world. So he says, I will use the Rasha to bring the Beracha to the Jewish people. Even though the last one that wants to bring the Beracha to the Jewish people is the Rasha. If he asks the Rasha, what's your goal in life? Not to bring Beracha to the Jewish people. Perfect. Now God says, well, you think you're in control? I'm going to use you to bring the Beracha. But I said, I don't want. Who cares what you want? I'm Echad. I do it. I control you. You don't control me. If you ask Paro, what is your goal? Paro is Hitler. Not to bring Berachat, to kill the Jewish people. Paro said, he wanted to kill them. So God says, ha ha, you want to kill the Jewish people? Paro, you're going to save Moshe.
Not only are you going to save Moshe, he's going to be live in your palace, and he's going to sit on your lap, and you're going to feed him applesauce in the mornings. You're going to raise the leader. When you see that, that's what happened. Moshe was raised by Paro. Now at the end, Paro scratches it. How'd that happen? I'm trying to do everything to kill the Jewish people, and Hashem says, but you took your job, I'm in charge. Hashem Ehad. When you see that even the Nesha'im are bent to fulfill the will of Hashem, then you see there's no powers in the world. If anybody had a doubt that there's an independent power, look at the story of Paro. Hashem's using him like a puppy, like a stick, like a tool. Understand what I'm saying? Even the Rasha, or especially God uses the Rasha to bring the prosperity to the Jewish people. And here's the classic example. Who was the biggest anti-Semite of his time? Lavan. You gotta know that. Lavan was an anti-Semite. You see, he tried to kill all of them. That was his goal, to kill all of them. At the end of the day, but look at the resume of Lavan, what he did. There's nobody that deserves more credit for building Klal Yisrael more than Lavan. Lavan gave his four daughters to Yaakov. Of course, he tried to sketch him. He tried to give him Leah further. But guess what? He gave him Leah first. Most of the tribes come from Leah, by the way. 6 of the 12 tribes come from Leah. She's the biggest mother of Klal Yisrael. And Lavan's thinking, if I do this, it'll ruin the whole plan. And at the end of the day, what do we tell Lavan? Azag Baruch. God says, Azag Baruch. Beautiful. It's good you gave him Lavan first. Because Leah first. Because that's how it had to happen. As the more Lavan tried to destroy Klal Yisrael, Borei Olam says, I'm Ehad, Lavan, you're a zero. So when you look at the Nesha'im, and you see that God uses them to fulfill what they did not want to fulfill, you understand my point? Against his will, Lavan, after Yaakov escapes Lavan's house, Lavan's going to scratch his head. How'd this happen? Which means, we have to go back to Hazak Hazak Baruch. We appreciate it. Because of you, we have 12 tribes, we have 4 wives. Hazak, you're unbelievable. And he said, but that wasn't my intention. My intention was to try to kill you. I don't know what happened. And you know what he answered Lavan? Hashem Ehad, you're a zero. So watch what happened now. Listen to what happened now. Comes Bil'am. Bil'am, not Bill Gates, Bil'am. Bil'am comes over here, also the same thing. Bil'am comes along and Balak sees him. Balak says, listen, you see all these Jewish people? It's your fault. Your fault. You're Lavan. You're the one that made all these people. Now you got to make tikkun, kill them all. That's the anti-Semites tikkun. You understand what Balak's intention was? Why did he choose Bil'am? He says, you're responsible for all these people. You let Yaakov live in your house. You gave him his daughters. You had grandchildren. You had a chance to kill him and you didn't. These are all your responsibility. If there's a Jewish problem in the world, Bil'am, you caused the problem. Therefore, you have to solve the problem. Understand? That's the tikkun of the anti-Semites. Anti-Semites want to make a tikkun that they failed in killing us first time around. So they have to make a tikkun to try to kill us the second time around. So Bil'am says, you're right, I messed up, I don't know what they did. They got me, but this time they're not going to get me. This time I'm going to curse. Because Bil'am forgets that Hashem Ehad. So God says, oh, you're doing the same trick again? Wait, I'm not Ehad, I was Ehad 1,000 years ago, I'm still the same Ehad. So Bil'am comes to try to curse the Jewish people. What does God do? All of a sudden, the biggest blessings coming out of his mouth. Here we go again. Exactly what happened to you in the first Gilgul. You tried to destroy Klal Yisrael. In the end, you ended up building Klal Yisrael. And Bil'am again comes to try to kill Klal Yisrael. And what happens? God says, to scale him his vote. We're going to use your poems at our weddings, if you don't mind, Bil'am, please. You can use by the way, I was trying to make it there be no more Jewish weddings. No, not only is it going to be Jewish weddings, but you're going to be the main, we're going to quote you. We're not going to quote Robert Louis Stevenson or Edgar Allan Poe. We're going to quote Bil'am. Bil'am says, don't quote me. No, we have to quote you. Please, don't quote me. That's the biggest curse for Bil'am, that we're quoting him at our weddings. Every time a Jewish couple gets married, they have more children. We named this Bet Knesset, all Yaakov. Look at the teva on top. Matovu Alecha Yaakov. He made it to our synagogue. Bil'am's
burning in his grave. He says, but that wasn't my intention, that we should be the banner of Ohel Yaakov synagogue. I was trying to destroy the synagogues. But God says, I'm Ehad. You don't have any control. I will use you as a tool, not to do what you want to do, to do what I want to do. That's what Ehad. And now we understand, ladies, why the Gemara wanted to put this story in the Shema Yisrael every day. You thought I forgot? In the beginning of the class, we raised the question from the Talmud. The Talmud says that the rabbis wanted to put Parashat Balak every day in the Shema. And we said, what's the connection? Because this is a perfect example of what Hashem Ehad means. Hashem Ehad means, God says, do not, all the people in the world, it looks like they're doing a lot of things. I'm using them in order to bring the final tikkun for Bnei Israel. They're nothing. They have no, so don't get scared of government. Don't get scared of enemies. Don't get nobody. What do you think? They have no power. I'm using them. Even though it looks like they're trying to hurt you, I'm going to use them to bring good to Klal Yisrael. I'll give you an example. The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, when Mashiach comes, now we have to finish with Mashiach. Always we have to finish with Mashiach. When Mashiach comes, the Goyim are going to come to God. By the way, ladies, this is a shiur we would give in the yeshiva to the... There's one guy in the community, he listens to the ladies' class. He listens, only when it says ladies, he listens to the ladies' class. So he tells me once, he's an Ashkenaz guy, he tells me, who are these ladies? Do they understand what you're talking about? This is yeshiva. They understand, could understand. Only you understand. What do you mean, they understand? It's funny, ladies understand. So he says like this, when Mashiach comes, the Goyim are going to come to God, and they're going to ask God for reward. We want reward. I said, reward? What do you want a reward for? So they're going to say, listen, we built all these highways, we built all these bridges, we built all these tunnels, we built all these beautiful cities, and we did it for the Jewish people. So God says, you did it for the Jewish people? You did it for yourself. You built the tunnels so you could charge tolls. You built the roads so you can go to make Averot. You didn't do it for the Jewish people. So one of the rabbis came along and said, are the Goyim going to lie to God? The Goyim would come, they built the Verizon Bridge for us? That's lying. They're not going to lie to God. So the rabbi said beautifully, he says, when Mashiach comes, it's going to be revealed that everything that the Goyim did in the world was ultimately for the Jewish people, to benefit the Jews. It's going to be clear to them. So it's not going to be even a lie. When Rav Aaron Cutler was riding on the Verrazano Bridge, he said, I promise you they built this bridge so the boys from Brooklyn could go to study Torah in Lakewood. That's why they built the bridge. Now, you say, but other people are using it. Okay, they can't build it every single time a guy wants to go to Lakewood. They leave it there. The other people could benefit from it. But everything is for Klal Yisrael. Now, I promise you, when they built the bridge, they didn't say, V'hinu'am, we're building it so they can get to BMG. No one had that kavana. But God says, you don't know what you're doing. I'm using you as a tool. You think you're doing it so you can charge easy pass. You're building it so the boys can... We can go to deal for the summer so we can get this. We can have to come to the shiur on Friday. Otherwise, no bridge, we can't get here. Take a long time. Take the ferry. Everything is for Klal Yisrael. Whether you know it or not. And in Latid Labo, God's going to show the Goyim that everything they did in the world, even the wars that they did, even all the antis, all that, they're going to realize, wait, we actually did all this and benefited the Jewish people. The classic example, just to show you how everything is fit for us. We went to Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is called in the Torah Kur HaBarzel. What is Kur? Kur is a kiln. You know what a kiln is? It's a hot oven. When you have metal and you want to purify it, you put it in the kiln, the Kur. Barzel. Barzel is iron. Iron has impurities. So you stick it in the kiln, and what happens? All the impurities, the dregs, they come out. That's how you purify. So the Torah refers to Egypt as Kur HaBarzel. Who is the Barzel? Us. And God put us in the Kur and purified us. That means actually the Egyptians didn't realize what they were doing. They purified us in order to go to Matan Torah. They thought they're killing us, but actually they prepared us for Matan Torah. So on the way out, we tell the Egyptians, Paros, Kim, as well, we appreciate it. You thought we were working for you? You were actually working for us the whole time. Wow. Who's the Eved over here? Paro was the Eved. He was working for us. I once saw from the Arizal, why do they call Egypt Barzel, Kura Barzel? They also put gold in the oven. They put silver in the oven also. Why is it called Barzel? Because we're the children of the Imahot. Who's the Imahot? Barzel. Bilha, Rachel, Zilpa, Leah, Barzel. Kura Barzel. That he took the Shivatim that came from Barzel, put us in the oven. And pure. My point is, even though you say, Paro is hurting us, God said, no, you're not hurting us. Actually, you're bringing us to our destiny. And that's why, at the end of Bil'am's prophecy, he got up and talked about Mashiach. And Maimonides says, it is from Bil'am's prophecy that we know, Darach Kochav B'Yaakov, there's going to come a star that's going to come from Yaakov. Vekam Shevet Mi'Yisrael, and there's going to come a tribe of Israel, the tribe of Yehuda. Why is he mentioning Mashiach? Because when Bil'am saw that no matter what him and his grandfather and his Gilgul were trying to do to Bnei Israel, Borei Olam shows everything you're doing is for Klai Yisrael, for their benefit. And when Mashiach comes, everything is going to be clear. Even the things we don't understand, all the events that are happening in the world, the Goyim are going to be proven, and it's going to be shown to them that all this was to benefit Klai Yisrael. God, at that moment, the people are going to realize that there's no other force. And that's what does it say? At that time, God is going to be the supreme king of the whole world. And even the Goyim are going to say, it's Echad. We say Echad every single day, because we believe it now. But when they see in the future, that everything they did, they thought they were working independently. They thought they were working against the system. And God actually said, you were the system. I was using you to run the system. You were running the system. So, oh, we thought we were trying to bring the history this way. I said, no, you don't bring it to your direction. You're actually bringing it exactly to where I wanted to bring it. Chazak baruch. But you're not getting rewards for it, because that wasn't your intention. You didn't have intention. If you would have built the Verizano Bridge with intention to get the boys to Lakewood, you get reward. You did it for your personal reasons. But I'm going to show you that your real underlying intent, whether you knew it or not, was for Klai. That's why the rabbis wanted to mention this parasha in Kiryat Shema, because there's a connection to the concept of Hashem Echad, and that's why Bil'am mentions the coming of the Mashiach, because it's at that moment when the oneness of God and His supreme power is going to be revealed. As we say, V'alu Moshi'im Bad Siyon Nishpot Ad Haresab, V'yital Adonai Melucha, V'ya Adonai Melech HaKol HaAretz, V'yomahu Yeh Adonai Echad, U'Shmo Echad.